Hey peoples, this is the Conspiracy Oz podcast. I'm your host Mick Raven. It is Tuesday the 21st of November 2023. This is the review covering alternative news and events. You can call plus 61 02 8006 1918 anytime. Drop me an email at conspiracyoz@protonmail.com. Go to the website conspiracyoz.com. Download the podcast from iTunes, Spotify, or Podomatic.com. And get the D program. Now, I recently did some flicking around on online to try and find all the versions of Brave New World and 1984. I wanted to figure out if there was any I hadn't seen, and there actually was quite a bit. People, you got to keep up with the the blueprint for modern society now, because that's what we've become. We're actually falling into the trap of. When they go on about the Bible and they go on about like revelations and things like that, you've got a blueprint here of 1984 and Brave New World, but actually it's actually happening like that. We're moving into this fully modern technical push-button world, just like in Brave New World, and also we have the surveillance of 1984, so we really have two in one. That's what's happened. And it's been there, and so like the blueprint of the revelation of the Bible, where people go, oh, it's happening. It's like, well, it's written. You see, you can, if you want to emulate it, you could. It doesn't have to be a prediction either. Same with the same two books that were written. And they actually contacted each other. Huxley, who wrote Brave New World, and Aldous Huxley, and George Orwell, also known as Eric Blair, actually contacted each other, because Brave New World came out in 1932, the book. And then 1984 came out in, strangely enough, 1948, because it was a reversal of the year, instead of 48, 84. But still, and the controversies have gone on ever since on which is the better one. It really doesn't matter. And you read all the reviews of this movie was terrible and that was better, and that's all irrelevant. What's relevant is the actual the plot and what it's actually about. Which means you don't have to get the best actors or the best writers to recreate it. It's actually perfect in its own form, originally written in the two books. So if you really want to know a blueprint of a modern society that could be totalitarian and completely surveyed, just read both books. Just get a hold of the original copies of both books and read them. Then all the adaptions don't really matter, but still, it is good to see that it's still a theme out there. People can still look at it and go, wow, we don't want this happening. Because that's really what it does conjure up. Even though Huxley argued that the Brave New World would be better, rather than beating the public into the plebs, I should say, into submission in 1984, you drug them up and make them feel. And that's exactly what we're getting. We're getting both people. We're getting the hate speech. We're getting the hate week. That's what they have. Especially with the Israeli-Palestinian thing that's happening at the moment. So that's real. And then we're also getting surveyed. That's real. And then you've also got people that are wanting the four-day week, and they want to sort of kick back and not work so hard. And, you know, more recreational drugs. They want to, legalize it all. They actually, since the 1960s, people don't realize this, but a lot of their drugs were introduced by, like the CIA in the US. And this is like the... not the acid, but the LSD. They were experimenting on it. They wanted to see if they could control the youth, and they introduced it into the music scene, but it went crazy, as you could tell. Still is. It's rampant. But it's become a youth thing to have this drug culture. But really, it was introduced. They tried to do it to contain the youth with the Vietnam War and all that happening. It didn't work. It backfired. So... here we are today. And so they could do that again. They could bring in like a lithium pill or something to calm people down, but they need everyone to realize something's wrong first. So this, and then you saw the terrorism come in for the last 30, 40 years. Terrorism was like a big deal. And it's still with us. They're trying to do it again because COVID failed, and that was through a drug, like the vaccine to save you. And now everyone realizes it was just a hoax, didn't work. Some people still believe it, but at the same time, it sort of just went away. A bit like the Ukraine-Russian war, it just sort of went away for a while till they need it again. But really, they're all just control mechanisms, because the society in the world, to these elitists that actually control most of business and what's happening on the planet, it's out of control with them. We're like breeding cockroaches where there's too many and they can't squash them anymore. So they've got to figure a way of blanket destroying everybody. And see, yeah, Brave New World wants to control the society through drugs and, you know, making the society want to be like that. And then you've got the antagonist in it with John Savage. You've got to go and read and watch this stuff. If you haven't already, do yourself a favour and do it. If you have, then you understand where I'm coming at. And in 1984, it also has a protagonist, but in a different way, sort of a fearful one. Whereas the one in Brave New World is a fearless one. So there's two different types of characters that they use. But really, it's the opposition of being forced to do something in whatever society you're in. So there, you've got Brave New World is like a utopian society. And they've actually done a TV series on it, which I didn't realise a few years back now, which actually got a decent rating. So I'm going to have to chase that one down. There's a 1980 version that I hadn't seen before, which actually stars the actor that plays David Bowman in 2001 A Space Odyssey, if you've ever seen that. And David Bowie, the musician, based his name on that actual actor, the actor's name in the movie, which is David Bowman. He called himself David Bowie because he was David Jones. And there was already a Davy Jones in the Monkees. So big cultural influences there. And Bowie went on to use his career based on that character just about. So I'm saying that big influences with those two books. Really, really big major societal changes from those books. But now we're seeing them being reflected as reality. And that's why I'm doing the podcast. That's why you're listening. Because the problems we're having now are real all around us and seem to be compounded and moving at a very fast pace. Where they're trying to get Brave New World to fuse with 1984. It really is very much like that. But remember, 1984 came out of World War II, you know, when the Russians had taken control of the eastern part of Europe and people were afraid of them. And if you look at the original map from 1984, if you go to the Jimmy Wales' Wikipedia, and he's screaming for dollars, people, so if you've got a spare dollar, throw it his way, or we won't have Wikipedia. And it's actually, as much as I think it's controlled, it's still a very good access point quickly in the initial stages to find something. It really is. So if you go to 1984 on Wikipedia, it'll actually show a map that was based on the book. And in the map, I'll see if I can get it. There it is. There's three factions. And it's very interesting to note that these days they are trying to create three zones. I've talked about this many times where you've got the one zone is like from Russia all the way down to the bottom of Africa, like in a straight line. We're talking like the, not longitude, but the latitude. And then you also have like the center where you've got China, and then you've got Australia, and you've got like the Asian region straight down, right? Right across that whole medium, another latitude. And then the third latitude would be North America, right down to the bottom of South America, and obviously Canada and that too, and Mexico and all that, straight down. So three zones. But in Brave New World, see, I'm getting mixed up already, people. In 1984, they have three zones as well. Pretty much the same sort of thing, but different, not the longitude, latitude thing. So they've just, because of World War II, this is what it's based on. So he's made out, Eric Blair's made out, the only place left that's actually Oceania, which is apparently the UK. So that's where he is. So he's obviously looking at, you know, the UK, North America, and including South America, South Africa, and also including Australia, and strangely enough, Papua New Guinea. Now, these are the zones for Oceania, and they have protracted wars that go on forever. So it's a bit like what's happening now where you've got these the Israelis versus the Middle East, where it seems to be going on forever. It hasn't been going forever, but they're making a perpetual war out of it. Same with now they've done one for Ukraine and Russia. Now, the other third zone in, because that's called East Asia. Oh, that's called Eurasia. Sorry, I've got to get these terminologies right myself. Eurasia is the European one. So we're talking like from Spain right through to Russia, and almost down Turkey and almost to India. So that whole area, and we're talking Italy, Spain, all of Europe, including Norway, and all, are all inclusive in Eurasia, who have a perpetual war against Oceania. And then they've got like the Chinese one, which is the one I said before, East Asia, which is China and Japan and a lot of the Asian countries and Thailand and stuff like that, all in this fictitious sort of world map. And there's a lot of grey areas too, like Greenland and Northern Africa and some parts of the Middle East, India included. and Indonesia as well, where it's they haven't actually won the territories. And it's a perpetual war that goes on forever. And so that's the zones that are in 1984. But based, in my opinion, on what would have happened if Russia had have beaten the US and taken Europe. This is exactly how it would have been, exactly like this. But anyway, I mean, even if the Nazis had have got Europe instead of the Russians, it would have been pretty... And remember, it's when you look at Oceania, that actually looks like it could be the Nazis, and that's actually the UK and the US. And that. But you can see that the same parallels with a totalitarian regime is sort of rampant in all those factions. So, yeah, and it's the same thing as what's happening today. All the police worldwide are all in black clothes with black boots, truncheons, the same thing, all heavily armed. It doesn't matter which country you look at. The cultural police look is gone. They actually look more militarized than the military in some instances, and that's pretty scary because the military still wear the army camouflage, whereas the police are just in black worldwide. Absolutely crazy. And this is it. So every time you see shows on TV and that, and the SWAT teams, you're looking at what the police of the future will look like and are looking like worldwide. The difference is, in my opinion, the globalists want to use the three zones, but they're all working together. They're not in a perpetual war. They don't want that. They can appear to have all these skirmishes and that here and there, but really they'll be working together as a one world government. You see? So that's so in other words, the Brave New World theme might take over, where everyone's working less hours, they're all drugged up. And the society of Brave New World is different, but because there are no births, not natural births. So mothers have been outlawed, families outlawed. It's a promiscuous society where they can, just swap partners, everybody, and it's normal too. They don't think it's unusual because they've been trained from birth. And because they've been born not in test tubes, but it almost looks like plastic bags. In the 1980 version. That's the one I watched. Apparently the main actor in that too is also in the Halo TV series as well, which got the big thumbs up. So, I mean, there's a lot of connections with Hollywood and themes to do with this. I mean, this is why I'm mentioning it. But still, they wanted the one world to be ruled by one globalist elite that run the three zones. But I'm not sure if that's going to happen. I think they might just get the Chinese to roll the whole world as a military police and just roll it from there. Doesn't mean China wins. It just means that they get that job and the other jobs will be allocated to the other zones and that's it. But the real targets are the proles, us, the plebs. That's the real target. That's what people have got to start realizing. It's got nothing to do with targeting businesses or this country or that national idea or this culture. No, it's actually targeting just the general public, the plebs, the third world and the middle class that's about to be knocked down to the third world. And they want to completely control them. That's why I also want to talk about the universal basic income today, because that's also going to be part of how they control that population. Because really, this population is, they've had enough. They've seen it all. They just want to have a good time now. And that's really the theme, people. It's really the theme. So if you watch any of these Brave New World ones, that's the theme. And I got a feeling that that one's going to win out in the West, whereas the 1984 one will win out in the third world. We're talking the countries that are still stuck in the third world and haven't really got out. And that's sort of what's happening. If you look at Russia, you look at China, that is what's happening there. So it's no surprise there. But I don't think they're going to run against the Brave New World Society. That's really what I'm trying to say. And I'm not like saying Russia is third world. It just means that it's better suited countries that have a totalitarian regime, like North Korea and Russia and places like that, that the public are used to being bossed around by one person, one source, And so in a third world situation, they're not actually used to that in a sense. Some of them are, like the Philippines and other places like that in the past. But places like India are still democratic. And this is what I'm saying. So that's also the biggest population in the world. I think it's overtaking China now. So there's still a balance out there, but at the same time, it looks like the youth coming through are going to be more susceptible, that's probably the best way to put it, to the Brave New World theme, and the older sort of third world people that are sort of stuck in the past will probably be more easily manipulated with the 1984 approach, which is suppression and surveillance and that sort of thing. Doesn't mean it's not going to exist in the other one, because it'll be there, but it just won't be in their face. It's a bit like if you're in a shop and there's cameras everywhere. After a while, when you're shopping, you just forget it's there. And even if you're an employee and you've got cameras on you all day, you actually forget the cameras are on you. So it's the same sort of thing, as opposed to the 1984 one where they're looking for the cameras, looking for them. In Brave New World, they're not. And there's a TV series that has just come out too, and I've saved all these. I'll put them all up as links. It's not a big deal. Most people know what Brave New World is and 1984, but as I said, there's adaptions there I had not witnessed before, and I thought it's really a good idea for people to do this. Now, these movies, when you go to find them, and like I said, they're hard to find on Netflix, they're hard to find on Amazon or any of the others, but you can actually just do a search, and I'm not kidding about this, people, on YouTube, and you'll find all of it. As funny as that sounds, because a lot of this stuff was supposed to be copywritten, but people just upload stuff all the time, and everyone knows that's what happens on YouTube, even though Google owns it. Everyone knows that every now and again something will pop up that's not supposed to be there, and then it'll be moved on. So in the case of this, I've got links that are in there that go to these. Anyone can access them and find them. And if you want to watch full-length things, they're there. But at the same time, like I said, the quality is really bad. Obviously, if you find the source that actually is showing this stuff, or you can buy it, that's the best way to do it, because you get the best sound and visuals. But if you just want to catch on to the theme of what's happening and how it was filmed back then, I recommend definitely those two versions. This we're talking about the 1980 version of Brave New World and the 1956 version of 1984. And just to let you know too, that just to be warned that the Brave New World 1980 version is 3 hours long. It's worth every minute, but it is 3 hours long. So it's going to tug at your attention span, if you've still got one, because a lot of people don't. And the 1984 one's just the standard 90 minutes, so hour and a half. So that's all right. But yeah, it's a lot to take in because the theme's been done to death. But this was when it was originally done. So it was way back before all the other versions, which we think were the first versions. These are actually the earlier versions. So anyway, I didn't want to get into a comparison of the two themes, as I said earlier. I more or less want to bring the similarities to what's happening in to the future, to what's happening now, and how both these ideas have fused into one idea that seems to be the theme of what these globalist elites are trying to achieve. And I honestly cannot figure out how they're going to do it. But I do know that snippets of what is happening is a reality. You know, anything to do with... See, at the moment, a lot of people are using the cards. You know, going back to years ago, the ATM card was the big deal. That came from Kissinger. Henry Kissinger was one of the first to bring the ATM machines worldwide in, wait for it, 1984. And to get that ball rolling. And today, where are we at? Our phones are waved in front of FPOS machines with a picture of the card on it. So don't be fooled by that, because that's more or less just... The phone is just a device. And we heard that... The Optus, the head of Optus in Australia, that had the 10 million people that couldn't access their phone/card/app/money, is about to resign. Is resigning. So this is what I'm saying. It's like it's pretty obvious that something as severe as that really does hit hard. And this is what I'm saying. It's because people expect everything to just work. They don't expect these new fandangle things to fail, okay? But it's all fallible. It can easily fail because they're all just systems put together, you know, with electricity and wire, and they can be, we've seen it happen. I don't have to say any more. But the bottom line is that it has all been funneled into one device. We used to think it was going to be a barcode or something like that that you would have tattooed onto your forehead. That's what everyone used to think. They thought that's exactly what was coming. I've told the story many times about the barcode and how if you look at the three guard bars on any of these barcodes on products, the thickness of the guard bar line equals what all the numbers on the barcode have their own thickness of a line if you look at a barcode properly. And the six, the number six is exactly the same thickness as the guard bars. Nothing else is. Which is like 666, and we all went, oh, hands in the air. There it is. But no, what's happening now is being funneled by the major banks in the world we're being directly tied to them, beyond government, beyond anything, directly tied to them in a way that we can't access cash. That's what they want us to try and stop us getting, so that we can't even get money out of the bank. We have to ask why we're taking our money out of the bank. That's what's happened, people. So that's dangerous, okay, because that means you're more or less in the bank's control, which is ridiculous. They're just there to enhance a little bit of interest on your money or give you a loan. That's it. They're not there to actually dictate to you what you're going to do with your money for the rest of your life. That's not how it should be at all. So I think that people are realizing now, they're starting to realize, especially after the Optus outage, a lot of people are now looking at their phones going, hang on, I don't want a be-all, end-all device because I just realized I can't access actual cash. For 14 hours, they couldn't do it. And it's sort of unheard of for 10 million people in one hit, okay, from a non-Australian company. So already you're dealing with a really big major problem that isn't going to go away. It can happen again and again and again. It just depends on how much people will put up with it. So that's why you've always got to keep cash going, people. That's why I've got the cash, Keep Cash Alive petition on conspiracyoz.com, and you do need to sign it. You seriously do, because if we lose cash, we will be in 1984/Brave New World, because they will have total control of us from birth to death through the banking system, okay? And they can have glitches. You could have all your money wiped out because it's not really money. It's just noughts and ones and credit. You could just have it wiped out, and they said you never had it. And then you've got to start proving from that point your point of view, whereas the bank will just move along as it does, and you'll starve to death. So the complications could cost you your life. So you don't want to be in that situation. Best to get cash out of the bank and stash it and keep it so that you've always got something. If the power goes down, you've still got something to trade with that's actually got currency value. If they ban it, all that cash will have no value and no one will accept it. It's starting to happen. Everywhere you go, no one wants to give you cash. No one wants to use cash, I should say. And that actually should change. I did see that they are trying to force a lot of banks to open ATMs in regional areas where they've obviously run around and closed them as quick as they could. And they didn't realize that they were going to get such a backlash. I think I've got a story here. One sec. Now, this is a story from 2GB Sydney. It's a radio station, so it's on 2GB.com. So obviously it's a transcript of the radio interview, but this is about the petition that's up at conspiracyoz.com. This is the one by James Bryce. I'll just get the name of it. I'll see what it's up to. I think it's the more than 120,000 now, I'd say, has signed it. But let's just have a quick look. So it's called An Australian Cash and Banking Guarantee Change.org. That's one I've got up on the left-hand side of the widget bar of conspiracyoz.com. At the moment, it's up to 154,000. So it's jumped. And I'll just see if there's an update. It says, no, not really. It's just got people updating what they believe is happening in the story. But now I'll get to the transcript from the radio interview. And it says this. It says, this is very interesting stuff too, people. 19th of October 2023, 400 banks gone, 700 ATMs gone. And it's got Cash Welcome Campaign Fights Back. It says Luke is joined by Jason Bryce. This is the guy that put the whole petition together. Spokesperson for the Cash Welcome Campaign following the financial regulator APRA yesterday reporting that Australia lost another 424 bank branches in the last 12 months. It says banks also closed or removed a further 718 bank-owned ATMs. And it says Mr. Bryce highlights that this is further restricting access to cash and full banking services. It says, despite the continuing inquiry into bank branch closures by the Senate's Rural and Regional Affairs Committee and the Treasury's modernising payment systems process. And I think I mentioned that on the podcast last week about that change that's coming in that payment system that the government's putting forward. It says, it is worth noting that some banks made explicit promises to stop closing branches while the Senate committee's process was underway. Mr. Bryce emphasises, Australians don't want to lose access to cash or their right to choose cash to pay for essential goods and services. It says banks enjoy a central place at the heart of our economy and the money system. Banks need to serve their customers and ensure that all communities have ready access to cash. It says more than 120,000 Australians have signed Mr. Bryce's petition calling for a cash and banking guarantee. Well, actually, that's up to 154,000 now. It says, you can add your and listen to the podcast here. So I'll put that up with the story when I get it all up, and you can check that out. But that's a sobering analysis of what's happened to the banking system in Australia. I don't think it's going to get any better. The whole idea is to close all the branches so that it's all online. Then they have us. Okay, that's what I'm saying. So cash needs to be used. If you don't use it, you will lose it. So the idea is to actually use it for things now and again. You don't have to use it all the time because I know it's not convenient. But at the same time, get some of that cash out of the bank. Stop hoarding it in the bank because you're giving them a reason to close the digital doors. If you've got cash on you, that doesn't matter. You can get by. All right. So you don't have to get it all out, but you do have to make it so that you're not going to be left with nothing, like the 10 million Optus users experienced when they had the outage. And it wasn't to do with the bank. Everyone's going, but that's Optus. Doesn't matter. That's the actual means to get to the bank when the door closed. So that could be, you could get a blackout, you could get a cyber attack, or you could have this outage within the actual company itself. There's many ways this can happen, but you don't want to be left out in the cold. Keep cash alive. Now, what I really wanted to talk about, apart from the not the comparisons of 1984 and Brave New World, is what is really just around the corner, which could materialize very, very soon. If people's houses get eaten up because they can't afford to pay back the loans because the interest rates have gone through the roof, a lot of those houses end up as rentals, then we're looking at a whole portion of society that may get lost in the ether, literally by losing their jobs and homes and end up in the rental market and then become victim to what may be in the future, which is called a universal basic income. And that's what I really wanted to talk about. Like, I did mention this stuff more than a year ago and many years over the podcast, but this is where it really looks like there's a possibility that this could actually happen. And it was people like Elon Musk that wanted to bring it on. So every time people go, oh, he's the good guy, think again. Now, I found an old article on conspiracyhealth.com from about a year ago, or a little bit longer than a year ago, about the universal basic income, because I've been researching this for a long time, waiting for it to materialize. But they actually mentioned something in this particular article that is really futuristic and also explains what has just happened with the COVID pandemic. So I'll just read on and just let you know. So this is about a thing called stagflation, which some people might have heard of and some people have not. So it says here to explain what it is. It says stagflation, or recession inflation, is a situation in which the inflation rate is high or increasing. The economic growth rate slows and unemployment remains steadily high. It presents a dilemma for economic policy since actions intended to lower inflation may exacerbate unemployment. So it says the term of stagflation and inflation is generally attributed to, it looks like Lane or Ian McLeod, a British Conservative Party politician who became Chancellor of the Exchequer in 1970. It says McLeod used the word in a 1965 speech to Parliament during a period of simultaneously high inflation and unemployment in the United Kingdom, warning the House of Commons of the gravity of the situation. He said, "We now have the worst of both worlds. Not just inflation on the one side or stagnation on the other, but both of them together. We have a sort of stagflation situation, and history in modern terms is indeed being made." So this is what stagflation is. You can see it's the two things together. It's the stagnation and inflation together at the same time. So keep that in mind. I'll go back to the article. It says, now this is the author speaking, "The stagnation threat worries the author more than any other for a number of reasons. And it's not just because of the potential for extreme poverty." It says, "As we all know, the strategy of order out of chaos is about creating enough desperation within a target population that the people are willing to give up their freedoms in exchange for a semblance of safety and normalcy. But what specific controls would the establishment seek out? It says stagnation has the ability to trigger much higher prices in necessities, while it simultaneously drags the GPD down along with wages, jobs, and manufacturing. That's what I believe is going to happen. They're going to do a four-day week and all this stuff, but that's what's going to happen. It's going to drag the jobs down, the wages down, and people will be working more for less. Even though they think they're only working 4 days, they may be working 10 hours on each of those days to make up the 40 hours, but then obviously being asked down the track, oh, could you work that fifth day? We're just a bit short-staffed. This is a real threat, and it just says reading on. There is also the very real threat of government price controls, which would suffocate production and reduce the supply of goods even further. It says, we are not quite to this point yet, marking this was more than a year and a half ago, but the danger is approaching fast. It says there are two initiatives. We're getting to the universal basic income. There are two initiatives within the World Economic Forum's Great Reset Agenda that parallel stagflation almost exactly. And the author predicts we'll be hearing more about them in the coming year. And that's exactly what has been happening, people. It says the first initiative is the concept of a universal basic income. And it said we heard a lot about this a few years ago, but the idea didn't stick too well with the American public because this is where it went first. The truth, however, is that we already have a UBI, and it says in the form of, and this is so true, people, the COVID stimulus checks, okay? Because remember, this was written, I'll just give you the date, we'll come back to it, and I'll just give you the date so you know roughly where this was, you know, to do with the pandemic. March 17th, 2022, okay? So quite a while ago from where we are now. But you can see there was a different mindset then. It's all changed now, but back then it was still, everything was still pushing the COVID the COVID wagon up the road. So it says here, reading on, it says, the UBI for a time in the form of COVID stimulus checks. It says this helicopter money was funded by over $6 trillion in central bank fiat created from nothing and then directly injected into citizen accounts. It was barely enough for people to live on by itself, but in conjunction with other welfare programs and unemployment checks, millions of people were living the easy life at home for well over a year. The money was so easy that the policy actually triggered a national labour shortage. And we still have it in Australia. They can't find enough people to work. I just heard recently too that Seek.com, which is a job site in Australia, an online job site to get jobs, has now got a shortage of ads. There's not enough businesses advertising to look for employees. That means two things. Businesses have disappeared or they just can't afford the new employees because they're doing it tough. This is a dangerous thing. And also there's ads out there for employees and they can't find them anyway. So we're heading towards a train wreck, a really bad one. Anyway, reading on, it says, this small taste of the UBI might have given people the wrong impression about such a stimulus program. After the COVID programs, the public might be led to believe that the UBI would result in a carefree life with money to go around. It says by themselves, without the benefit of other welfare programs, the COVID checks would not have been enough to keep people housed and fed. It says the standard of living for the average person would have to fall dramatically for the UBI to work at all. And it says enter stagflation. It says with economic decline crushing our living standards, it could be easier for the establishment to lure the public into a UBI, along with communist-style price controls across the board and a reduced population due to starvation and poverty. Funny that. The public would be able to survive, but barely. There would be no longer such a thing as personal wealth, only the scraps that the governments and bankers are willing to throw people. On top of that, resistance to authoritarianism would be nearly impossible. Once the government takes on the role of mummy and daddy, and the only source of food and housing for the citizenry, they are far less likely to stand against any abuse the establishment wants to dish out. That is so true. That's why they want to do this, people. the UBI leads us into the second WEF Great Reset program, which is the concept of the shared economy. The globalists think that you should own nothing, have no privacy, and be happy about it. The initial danger here involves rationing. A government cannot institute a UBI measures against a stagflationary crisis without also instituting price controls. That's a really big possibility, people. Because otherwise, the fiat stimulus used to provide the UBI checks would only create more inflation in prices. It's as if UBI is meant to offset inflation, but it creates more inflation, then the UBI becomes useless. This is another little fact that people like Pelosi, this is Nancy Pelosi who was going on about all this in the US, will try to gloss over when they claim that money printing helped fight inflation, which is ridiculous because it has no value. It's fiat currency. There's no gold bars in the bank, people. When they have notes, it's IOUs for the gold bars in the bank that you're actually borrowing from. And they don't exist. So it's just bits of polymer with a promise. It doesn't have any value. So it's when price controls are implemented, manufacturing will implode further. Because price controls mean producers of necessities will not be able to make much of a profit, or they will make no profit at all. There will be no incentive to produce among the people that actually know how to produce. And these people are not easy to replace. The supply of goods will not be able to meet demand. Naturally, the government will take the opportunity to limit the amount of goods any single person or family is allowed to purchase or stockpile through rationing cards. They'll know what you bought. See, if cash goes, they will be able to do this because they'll know exactly how much they've given everybody and who should have how much and why. This is an extremely dangerous situation. And why is this happening, people? Because people are lazy. And why did I say that, people? Because if you remember in last week's podcast, this is to do with the four-day week that I did. It's got just to do with the workplace values that are shifting. This was the head of the whole thing. And it says, it's not because workers are being lazy, but instead due to a value shift. So they call it a value shift. So no, it's not that people want to put their feet up and let the robots do everything. No, it's not because of all the movies they saw where they could do that. No, it's because it's called a value shift. That's the word they're using for it, people. So if you remember that, then you'll know what I'm talking about. But it's very, very funny. I mean, it's just ridiculous. So it says, reading on, it says, these kinds of measures have been used in the past, usually during wartime or under communist regimes. But in this case, the rationing will be digital and permanent. That is so true, people. And it will be designed to further control food and other resources as a means to prevent rebellion by the public. It says, if you can't store more than a week's worth of necessities at any given time, then your ability to defy the government is non-existent, unless you know how to live off the land or have access to black markets. All they have to do is cut off your monthly UBI checks and ration account and watch you starve. And that's so true, because no one's going to help you because they're going to be fearful it'll happen to them. This is what happens if you have no knowledge of how to keep yourself alive. And that's where we're at. That's exactly where we're at. They're trying to close down all the fresh food markets, all the stalls and all the, on the side of the roads and, you know, the health issues. Just get rid of them. And they're moving on it really quick, people. Community gardens, they want to get rid of all of it so that you have no access to know how to look after yourself. Trying to get people out of the regional areas and into the cities where you've got no chance of doing it. It's the whole purpose. They're spraying the skies so they can raise the pH level so you can't grow anything. I mean, it was only the other day, I think it was on Sunday, that there was a massive chemtrail sky in the sky, big spray right across. And we had blue skies, right, the Sunday. And I said to the missus next day, it'll be overcast and cold. Because what they do is these sprays turn in like a greenhouse effect. And it actually wasn't cold. It was muggy, which was unusual. And that's exactly what happened. So it can be cold too. They can change the weather. They can do these things. But the spray they did look like it was just going to do a greenhouse effect on us, which is what they say they're claiming to stop. And they actually produce it. And that gives them the power through weather control and through owning the food, controlling the food, that we haven't got a chance. We're a bit like the sheep in a pen just waiting for the next feed. That's where it's going to be. And that's the best way that they think to control the population is through the food and water. That's what they want to do. This is what they're all about. So you got to keep your eyes on that. I did hear one good thing the other day. I heard that in Australia, in Queensland, the state of Queensland, out of 70 councils, this is a really good thing to know, and I'll see if I can find the story too, 50 councils have taken fluoride out of the water supply. So this is really good news because fluoride is a rat poison. It's not good. They say, oh, we only put a little bit in there. It's for your teeth. Then why are you swallowing it and passing it through your organs in your body when it's actually a poison? Look it up. So you see that what they have to do is keep feeding you the BS and you'll just believe it because it's come from the government. So it can't be wrong. But half these politicians, they're all crooks just about. They all get six figures payment. A small smattering of them might at one stage join the political movement to try and change it, but then they get sucked up into it and they get their bags of gold and that's the way it is. It's a bit like any industry like that where it's very corrupt at the top. It's very hard to knock the corruption out of it because everyone's on the take, if that makes sense. Okay, I found this story. It's from the worldpopulationreview.com. I don't know anything about it. I haven't looked it up, so I'm not sure what it's from. I should do the research, but I just thought this universal basic income thing was very, very interesting because it's telling you how many countries have it already. This is an important thing. So this is for 2023, so it's up to date. It's got countries with a universal basic income 2023. It says universal basic income, also known as basic income, is a social service model that provides all citizens of a country a small monthly or annual spend, which each person receives regardless of their employment status. Now, that's interesting, isn't it, people? Income or any other qualifying factors. The UBI aims to reduce poverty and increase the quality of life among citizens, and it says, as of early 2022, no countries had implemented a truly universal basic income model, though a few had launched UBI-like programs specifically designed to aid the neediest individuals. Universal basic income models differ in their sources of funding, amounts distributed, and other dimensions. In the past four decades, many countries, including Finland, Canada, the United States, and Brazil, have discussed and debated the UBI models. Many governments and private corporations, or organizations, I should say, have gone on to implement pilot programs to determine the practical cost of the universal basic income, as well as its effectiveness in fighting poverty and its effects. The Basic Income Earth Network is one of the many groups devoted to the promotion and the implementation of universal basic income in countries around the world. It says the BINE defines the UBI using the following criteria. So you can see this is actually promoting the UBI, this particular article, but I'll read on and give them a chance. It says five defining characteristics of a universal basic income. One, periodic, distributed in regular payments. Two, cash payment, distributed as funds, not coupons or vouchers. That's, I like the cash part, people. Three, individual, paid to every adult citizen, not just every household. Four, universal, it is paid to all citizens regardless of their situation. And five, unconditional, there is no requirements regarding employment status or any other criteria. It says the pros and cons of the universal basic income. As with other policies and models, universal basic income has its advantages and disadvantages. It says supporters point out that many UBI pilot programs have resulted in increased school attendance and employment, ooh, greater community health, ooh, and improved financial stability with no corresponding increase in negative traits. Well, why would you have any cons for it, people? Such as unemployment claims or alcohol abuse. Supporters also argue that the UBI enables college students to receive a degree in what interests them and not just a degree in what will make them money, because payments are automatic and do not require eligibility evaluations. The government would spend less time administering the welfare that it does now. However, opponents of the UBI argue that the system could not be funded on a nationwide scale without raising taxes for everyone. Additionally, because there are no requirements to receive the UBI, like proof of employment or willingness to find employment, people may be disincentivized to work, and that's exactly what they want to do, people. They want to make you lazy. Or what was that term I said before? Lazy equals, I've got to remember that term now. It's completely gone out of my head. It was to do with a value shift. That's it. God, it came back. Could be a word we hear a lot of. Two words, actually. So that's what I'm saying. They're saying it may disincentivize people to work, which is exactly what the outcome will be. It's actually what happened in COVID as well. It says free income could also trigger inflation, cancelling out the UBI's stated goal of decreasing poverty and increasing the overall standard of living. So there you go. That's all they gave you. That was the only bad thing, is that you might not want to work. You might get lazy. But that's what they want you to do. So if you look at what they're saying, the pros and cons, that, all of that they want to do. So they're going to just push it hard and hard as. And it says notable experiments in the universal basic income. It's got the universal basic income in the United States. It says the United States has hosted nearly a dozen pilot programs in universal basic income. It says the longest running of these is the Alaska Permanent Fund, which has awarded each of its citizens a portion of the state's oil and gas revenues, roughly about $1,000 to $2,000 per year since 1982. In 2020, the presidential candidate Andrew Yang campaigned with a universal basic income plan, and I remember that, people, called the Freedom Dividend. The Freedom Dividend responds to the increasing automation that will inevitably take away one in three jobs from American workers over the next decade. And it actually is. It's increasing quicker than that. Yang's plan would distribute a $1,000 partial dividend to each American adult every month, which is about $12,000 a year, enough to help, but not so much that it would encourage recipients to stop working. Several states have tried small-scale basic income programs in the past, including Alaska, North Carolina, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Iowa, and California. And it says universal basic income in Norway. The country whose system most closely resembles a universal basic income is Norway. It says Norway is a welfare state, ensuring that all Norwegian citizens residing in the country have access to education, universal health care, and income in the form of social security or benefits. However, recipients of the monetary benefit must still meet specific conditions. For instance, they must seek work, abide by the law, participate in elections, and pay taxes. Then it says universal basic income in Finland. In 2016, Finland launched a basic income experiment with 2,000 randomly selected unemployed citizens who were each given 560 euros, which is about $640 American monthly, although the amount was only 50 euros more than what participants were previously receiving from unemployment benefits. So pretty much the same. They reported being happier and in better health. They also greatly appreciated being relieved of the ongoing paperwork involved with maintaining proof of unemployment eligibility. It sounds like they just let them off the hook to be lazy and said, we'll leave it up to you to say whether you're looking for work or not. It's just, you can see why they're happier, because if you're lazy already and you're not being hassled, you'll be far more happier. But the fact that they're saying that they are doing better with the rest of their life is a bit hard to believe, because you can't buy anything. You don't have enough money. So you're trapped in that cycle of poverty, in a sense, where if you want to stay happy, that's fine. But if you want to own nothing, well, you'd be even happier. But if you want to own something, it's unattainable. So it says universal basic income in Brazil. It could be argued that Brazil has been more openly supportive of the universal basic income than any other country. It says the UBI, like Bolsa Família social program established in 2004, delivers a stipend worth roughly 20% of the minimum wage to the neediest 25% or so of Brazil's people, helping them buy food, school supplies, clothing and shoes. The town of Santo Antônio do, it looks like Pinhal, or Pinhai, I think it's Pinhal, has gone a step further and established one of the world's first true UBI systems, giving all residents who have lived there a minimum of 5 years a portion of the city's tax revenues. Funny, you pay tax and you get tax back for just being there. It's interesting. It says, finally, a privately funded UBI pilot program has been active in the region of the, looks like, Quatinga Velho since 2008, and according to data, has led to improvements in living conditions, health, housing quality, and nutrition, particularly among children. So imagine rewarding someone for being somewhere for 5 years. And it seems to me that it's saying here, has gone a step further and established one of the world's first true UBI systems, giving all residents who have lived there. So this is a way of keeping you in the CBD or the city or just the area they want you to stay in by offering rewards like that. If you stay there long enough in the one place, we'll reward you. So that incentivizes people to come together, be very lazy and receive free money. I have no other way to explain this, people. Now, to finish up, it says, do any countries have universal basic income? And it says many countries have discussed universal basic income or established pilots to study it. However, only Iran has a full universal basic income for all its citizens. So here we are moving down the track to become a totalitarian society, to be ruled by the Chinese military police. And then also have established universal basic income, which is already in operation in Iran. That's the future, people. If we let it become like that, keep cash alive. That's the answer to it. It says, how many countries have universal basic income? Iran has full universal basic income. South Korea offers partial basic income. These two countries are the only two that have programs in place for many of their citizens. So you can see the country that gave birth to the Squid Games, South Korea, is trying to look after all its citizens. So this is just around the corner, people. You might think, oh, it's never going to happen. You just need an economic collapse, which is what the Great Reset's all about, for everyone to realize they have to start again. And then here comes along the government and the elitists with their plan of a UBI to make sure everyone isn't left behind. In fact, everyone will be left behind because that's the purpose of collapsing businesses, make you lose your home to, you know, so you can keep getting by. It's all designed to strip you of all your private property. That's the whole point of this, and give you nothing to own so that you are just a vessel or a vassal or whatever you want to call it of the government, and you'll get a number. That's when you get your digital ID number and you'll be very happy because most people won't be working. They'll just be sponging off the ones that are. I mean, that's a system we've had for a long time. And it's not sustainable, but they don't want it to be sustainable. Because once we're all dumped down into that lower echelon, right down the bottom there, there's no middle ground, no middle class, gone. You understand? It'll just be a technocratic ruled societies from the top, and you'll just have masses down below. And they will start the culling, people. They won't care. They won't care, people, because then they'll have you. Because if you don't obey, you don't eat. Because you can't grow your own food. You've got to learn these tricks, people. Get out there in the garden, start learning how to live and survive. Now, I have a whole bunch of stories about the UBI, some recent, some not so recent, but all this year. But it gives you an idea that this is now the talk of the town. This is where they're going to try and implement this when the economies collapse worldwide. So this is from everaldcompton.com. And it's a site about the vision of politics and nation building. So you can see that it's about that. It came out June the 4th, 2023, evidentcompton.com. And it says, out with Centrelink, in with universal basic income. And it's got, most governments around the world have welfare programs that attempt to to provide for basic needs of its citizens who are old, ill, poor, unemployed or disabled. It says these programs are far from ideal and are narrowly targeted as is possible. It says a huge amount of paperwork is needed to apply for welfare, and if you qualify, you are constantly required to prove that you remain eligible. And we've seen that before in Australia for decades. It says, if you are fortunate enough to qualify for it, usually after a long waiting period, you find that it places you on or below the poverty line. And this means you live under constant financial and emotional pressure. And that's so true. There is also a stigma attached to anyone who applies for welfare. You are regarded as a lesser being when you receive it. Indeed, many in your community will regard you as lazy and undeserving burden for your fellow citizens to carry. And that's sort of true too, people. There is a stigma. It says, in addition, taxpayers pay excessively for their government to employ many thousands of public servants to manage a huge bureaucratic welfare system. It says, in Australia, we call it Centrelink. I used to call it Monkeylink, actually. And it can justly be proclaimed as the most hated, inefficient and ineffective institution in the nation. Well, it's meant to be dysfunctional. It's supposed to give people that are on welfare a hard time so they get off it. So you can understand that they deliberately make it like that, but it doesn't help the person that's going through it, especially if they're undeserving. But anyway, reading on. It says, far too many nations, especially Australia, have far too often had governments whose ideology has led them to want to punish welfare recipients, regarding them as sinners in need of repentance. It says, the criminal application of robo-debt in Australia is a prime example of welfare prosecution that caused people to suicide. Now, that happened, people. It says, this is when they sent out via the message services that you owed money to the government, and it was all done wrong, and the government had to retract it, but it caused people to go over the edge. I mean, this is the real world we live in, people, even in Australia. It says there just has to be a better way to create a just and decent society. So here's a Hegelian dialectic, you know, problem, reaction, solution. So the governments are going to give you a hard time to get the money out of the taxpayers to keep you alive. And so that's the cause and, you know, the outcry. Now here's the solution, people. Are you ready? Indeed there is. And it's called the Universal Basic Income, the UBI. An enlightened alternative that a few nations have experimented with regionally, and the results show noteworthy promise. The province of Manitoba in Canada is a good example. The basic plan is this. And listen to this, people, because this is coming, especially when the global economy collapses, which it will. It says every registered voter, and that's a really big key word too, people, who actually votes, so as to prove their identity, this is crucial that you listen to this, will receive an unconditional monthly payment from government without applying for it. It should be at least the size of the current age pension, and you will receive it until the day you die. And you're thinking, how are they going to do that? Well, there was a big key thing there, people. You have to be a registered voter. See, if you're not on that electoral roll or you're not eligible to be on it, you will not receive this extra money. Because that's what it is. Even if you've got a job, you still keep this. Let me read on and you'll hear. If you also earn wages for work or income from enterprise or investment, the UBI you receive will be counted as taxable income, but you are not punished for working as currently happens with the age pension in Australia. So you can have both, people. If you choose not to receive the UBI, you instruct government to pay it into a sovereign fund that is established for this purpose and is used for nation building projects. So there's a choice, as always. The cost to government of providing funds to pay for the UBI, wait for it, is partially offset by the savings generated from closing Centrelink. Can you believe that, people? So the amount of money they're going to save from Centrelink will carry the UBI for X amount of years. It says the remainder is covered by ensuring that all tax evaders pay a minimum tax on revenue no matter how much they claim as losses. Now, that's going to be a hard one to implement. We need to wait and see. So this is how they're going to gouge the money to pay for this utopian society that's coming. If you want to believe it, that's fine, but I know what exactly is going to happen here. Anyway, it says a prime benefit of the UBI in social terms is that there is no such person as a welfare recipient. All stigma is removed, as no one can tell what your personal position actually is. It says the existence of UBI means that there is never any need for governments to make relief payments to people when crises occur, such as floods, fires, droughts. It says everyone is receiving their UBI payment every month, no matter what tragedies hit them. You're thinking, bring it on. It says mental health improves dramatically and its economic cost is reduced as UBI removes financial tension from millions of lives. Now, just think about for a minute. Why do you think people have this mental tension? Would it be that banks used to lend oodles of money to people that they knew could never pay it back, and then they shot the interest rates up to reclaim their houses? Could that possibly be contributing to the mental health problems? Or maybe that's just a, you know, something I just made up. So it says here, more people will become self-employed as they start small businesses, knowing that if they fail, they have their UBI to sustain the basics of life while they have another try. So here you go. They're telling you that UBI, which is a bit like working for the dole or just the dole, is going to give you no more stigma. And then you can fail as many times as you like at a business around all the other people trying to do exactly the same thing. This is fine. I understand that that's not a bad thing. I think breaking the 5-day a week working for the man thing is a good idea. But I don't think that's the intention. That's my point. Anyway, let me read on. We'll get to it anyway. It says, more people will become self-employed as they start small businesses. And it says, as always, with every social initiative, special attention will need to be given to people who are in very special situations where they usually fall through the cracks. It says the first step in introducing UBI into Australia will be for the Prime Minister to establish a committee of Parliament to study it in depth and determine whether or not it can be designed to work effectively in Australia. If it reports positively, then legislation can be introduced to implement it. If you agree in principle with UBI, and it says, and this is interesting, please send this article to your local federal MP asking him or her to advocate the establishment of a committee of Parliament right now. It will take a courageous government to implement UBI, but the author thinks that our current Prime Minister and Treasurer may be the leaders to pioneer it. It's just already funny. It says UBI is not an idea that the author has thought up. Far from it. The author has simply been following its slow but purposeful introduction overseas, especially in Scandinavia and Canada. It says the prime advocate here in Australia is a long-standing friend of the author's, Dr. Karen Stenner, who is a highly experienced political scientist of excellent international repute. The author is an enthusiastic volunteer on her team who, in the author's twilight years, wants to be part of a huge social and financial revolution that UBI will create. So this is someone pushing the idea to replace Centrelink. So we already have a social mechanism. We have the NDIS, the National Disability Insurance Scheme. We have Centrelink. We have many factions within the government departments that look after all the people that have those needs. But what they want to do here, people, and you got to think about this, they're going to roll it all. The healthy, the disabled, the whoevers, the whatevers, howevers, all into the one melting pot. All receiving the same amount. Do you understand what I'm getting at here? It means that it's going to tar everyone as the same. Now, then when they pull the rug, because this is my interpretation of what's going to happen with the Hegelian dialectic, with the problems, the reaction, this is apparently the solution, they're going to pull the rug from under everybody by collapsing all those jobs. The middle class will collapse into a heap, and then you'll have all these people on very basic UVIs to try and survive. And all they have to do is increase the cost of living, and it's going to destroy them all. They won't raise the UVI to meet it. This is the balancing part where everyone thinks, oh, I'm okay for a little while if I could just get a job. But it's not going to happen, people. This is how they'll get you. Once you get to that stage where you've had to sell off everything just to maintain a certain lifestyle you had before, then you will absolutely own nothing, but you will definitely not be happy. Okay? This is why this is extremely dangerous. It looks great. It's a bit like the COVID payments I was saying earlier, where you get all this free money, time off, put your feet up, and you think this is great. You don't understand that you actually can't get ahead. You can't actually get further down the road. They want to keep you in one spot. Okay? And this is a perfect, perfect way they want to do it. So I just thought I'd read that one off. So that one was from way back then. Then there was another one that came out in The Guardian. And this is in the 4th of June 2023. And this is from theguardian.com. And it says a universal basic income of £1,600 a month to be trialled in two places in England. And it says the scheme to run for 2 years and participants will be monitored to see what effect it has had on mental and physical health. It says a universal basic income of £1,600, get it right, a month, is to be trialled in England for the first time in a pilot program. 30 people will be paid a lump sum without conditions each month for 2 years and will be observed to understand the effects on their lives. Two places in England have been selected for the micro pilot scheme, Central Jarrow in North East England and East Finchley in North London. Will Strong, the Director of Research at the think tank Autonomy, which is backing the plan, funny name that one, said of the £1,600 figure, "This is a substantial amount. The universal basic income usually covers people's basic needs, but we want to see what effect this unconditional lump sum has on people's mental and physical health, whether they choose to work or not." Now, that's actually really important, that. But they don't really want you to work, people. They just want you to sit, kick back, enjoy yourself, wait for Maxwell's silver hammer, because it will be coming. Now, reading on, it says, our society is going to require some form of basic income in the coming years. And it says, given the tumult of climate change, too funny, people, it says tech disruption and industrial transition that lies ahead. This is like AI. This is like people losing their job through all that sort of automation. It says, this is why building the evidence base and public engagement now is so important. So the ground is well prepared for national implementation. It says, advocates argue that universal basic income can provide a level of economic security to everyone. It is seen as a potential solution to insecurity in the labour market, while others say it is an expensive and support should be targeted. Last year, it says, Burnham, the mayor of Greater Manchester said the UBI was an idea whose time had come. As he spoke on the cost of living crisis, Burnham said a universal basic income will put a solid foundation beneath everybody so they can have a life with security and stop worrying about everything. It's just, you can't believe they make this stuff up. It's just incredible they think that this is the magic solution to society. It says similar pilots are already underway in other countries. In Wales, the devolved government is running a scheme paying a £1,600 a month for 2 years to young people leaving care. It says it will report on the outcome after the trial finishes. And it says in 2020, more than 170 MPs and peers urged the government to introduce a universal basic income to give everyone the financial support they need to provide for themselves and their families during the coronavirus pandemic, which apparently is on the surge again, people. They want you to take more shots, but that's we knew that was going to happen. It says Cleo Goodman, a co-founder for the initiative Basic Income Conversation, said, "We're hopeful that this plan will result in the first ever basic income pilots in England. No one should ever be facing poverty, having to choose between heating and eating in one of the wealthiest countries in the world. It says basic income has the potential to simplify the welfare system and tackle poverty in Britain. I'm telling you, people, this is going to be the smoke and mirrors of the worst thing that's ever happened in society, where people will be trapped on the UBI, because that's what they want. That's the whole point of getting the middle class out of their cars, out of their homes, out of their jobs, and into the UBI. It says a control group will be recruited and not paid the basic income to monitor their experiences during the same period. Participants will be randomly selected from a pool of volunteers, with 20% of places allocated to people with disabilities. Strong said, all the evidence shows that it would directly alleviate poverty and boost millions of people's well-being. The potential benefits are just too large to ignore. With the decades ahead set to be full of economic shocks, so true, due to climate change, so not true, and new forms of automation, partly true, basic income is going to be a crucial part of securing livelihoods in the future. So you can see that the climate debate helps push the UBI debate. That's why they push it so hard. This is why this is happening now, because everything's moving in lockstep. So that was that article. That's the one I thought that was, it was sort of pointing towards what's happening in the UK with the universal basic income. And now I've got another story, which is pretty much the same story around the same time. So I won't jump into that one. It was a CNBC one. So it's just an American version of exactly the same story. Although they do have this thing about the UBI debate. So I'll just read that from this article from CNBC.com. That came out on the 5th of June 2023, so the same time. And it's got universal basic income of nearly $2,000 a month to be trialled in England for the first time. So that's actually not true, because that's American dollars, so that is true. But you get an idea how they're rounding the figure off, £400 in England, $500 American dollars. It's all going to be something that you're sort of thinking, oh, it's a little bit better than the dole, so I think we could do this. Remember, during COVID, people were getting something like $750 a week. That's like a very low basic wage, but it was a lot more than what the dole was paying. So it's got people thinking it's possible that this could happen, that it could work. So they're all just, thinking about, oh, it could be, we could have a way out of here. I could do my idea of this and that and that and that if they just do this. But what's going to happen to big business and other jobs? They're going to lose a lot of people to these ideas, because people will just drop off the radar and go ahead and try and pursue what they think is going to be their dream. And this is going to collapse a lot of businesses. So it's going to be less choice and it's going to be harder. And this is why they're doing it. But we have to wait and see, because people may revolt against this idea as well and come up with a better one themselves. And that's what I'm hoping for. More like a community-driven project as opposed to these globalist-driven ones like the UBI. Because they're all tied to banks. All these ideas are tied to a central banking, digital currency system. Because that's how you would be paid by the government. You would have to appease them to receive this, you see. You wouldn't have any individualism or any sort of kickback from it. They would just keep you on the edge all the time, and you would be just totally beholden to the government, and that's what they want. That's the real thing they want. That's the carrot. So, and reading on here, it says, see if I can find it. The UBI debate, it says, whilst there are different forms of UBI, most proposals would see everyone receive the same amount of money, regardless of their wealth or employment status, and with no conditions attached. So this is why I said it was a broad brushstroke across all society, where you would all receive exactly the same amount. It says the concept has long been discussed in countries around the world as a way to take pressure off social security systems and alleviate poverty. It says this has been especially pertinent since the COVID-19 pandemic, which is pretty similar to the other story. So I think I won't read any more about it. But it says a UBI could even impact the way people feel about work. It says some research suggests, it says in 2022, 19% of Americans said it would ease their frustrations with their jobs. Well, this is going to get extra money, aren't they? And here's a bunch of globalists. I'll read this bit. I have read this in the past, but I'll read it again. It says in the US, the concept gained traction after former Democratic presidential candidate Andrew Yang, who is now co-chair of the Forward Party, suggested giving every American $1,000 a month. So that's your $250 a week. That's American money, so that works for them. It says Meta's CEO Mark Zuckerberg, alias the Julius Caesar, the world's richest person, Elon Musk and British billionaire Richard Branson have also spoken out in favour of UBI, and that is so true. People think Elon Musk, well, great guy. No, he's part of this whole process. They're all together, people. They're not separate. They are in the cloud over Mount Olympus, looking down at us, waiting for this to happen. It says both Musk and Branson have said the emergence of artificial intelligence and the impact it will have on jobs is the key reason they believe UBI is necessary. And in fact, it's funny that because Musk is one of the ones that invested in artificial intelligence. So he's the problem, reaction, solution. He's actually putting money into AI by telling you on the one hand and on the other hand saying, well, you're going to need a UBI because you won't have a job. It's just, yeah. Anyway, I won't read any more, but you can see what they really think about what they want to do with you. So moving on to the next article. This is a whole bunch of articles. So I'm not going to go into it. It's from the conversation.com, and there's about 60 articles. A lot of them are loosely based on the UBI. So I'll probably pick a few of them maybe at the end of the podcast. I'm just going to breeze through the next bunch of stories. But you can see this is not going away, people. When the recession hits and the jobs are gone and people are starting to feel the pinch right now as I speak, then you'll be offered this. This is the Hegelian dialectic. When they destroy the economy, collapse the jobs and offer you this as salvation, and you will accept. But I don't know about the happy in the long term, but you'll end up owning nothing. That's sort of true. Okay, so this story is from June the 22nd, 2023. So you can see there's a lot of UBIing happening mid-year, just before the before the end of the financial year, where they're trying to test people's patience, you could say, with what was going to happen after the economies in the world started to plateau, which is really what is happening. Now, this is from the World Economic Forum, so let's see what the actual controllers want to do with the rest of us with this idea. It says, and they start with a question, does universal basic income work? These countries are putting it to the test. So remember, these guys stand aside like the referee. They don't want to be completely finger-pointed just yet for these ideas, but Klaus Schwab would love to see you on a universal basic income. So it says, two trials of universal basic income have been launched in England. So we already know about that. I've already mentioned it. 30 people will each receive $2,046 for 2 years. So that's American dollars. The Welsh government previously launched a guaranteed income scheme for people leaving the state care system. It is aimed at easing what can be a difficult transition to independent life. So independent, isn't it? It says guaranteed income schemes have been tested in a number of countries. Research shows that recipients work more and have better mental health than those of unemployment benefits. It says, when times are hard, we could all use a little help. For 30 people in England, a universal basic income scheme trial will see them receive $2,046 for the next 2 years. So we've got to wait for this time in a year and a half to see what's going to happen. You know, and I know, that the economy's probably collapsed by then, and then they'll say this trial is a resounding success and everyone will sign up. But of course, wait for it, people. You've got to have a digital ID first, because that's what they're going to offer you. This is how they join it all together with a central bank digital currency. This is how they're going to do it. Anyway, so reading on, it says, The trial is being held by the think tank Autonomy, what a great name, which is looking to access the impact of UBI on the lives of recipients. The money is paid in cash and there is no conditions attached. The payment is not means tested and the recipients can work while they're receiving the payments. Now, what happens to the people? And we know this for a fact, people, that there are people out there that just can't handle cash. They go off and gamble. They lose it to this. They lose it to that. They overspend with that. They buy this. They buy that. That's why we're in so much trouble. Why? Because credit cards, which is not real money, has gone ballistic. Yeah, okay? The banks have all lent too much money out, and it's starting to collapse now. The big lenders that have lent the mortgages to houses are now about to claim it all back. This is what is being pushed on people covertly without them realizing. And now most people are caught up in this, thinking that their jobs would be secure, their pay would go up above the cost of living and they would be okay. No, that was never the plan for Agenda 21/30, ever. So reading on, it says, Will Strong, the director of research at Autonomy, told The Guardian, our society is going to require, this is like actually in Brave New World, they call it our Fordship. And you're going, Fordship? Ford? Yeah, they actually worship the Model T Ford. You know, Henry Ford. He's a globalist. So that's why they call it our Fordship. Go and watch it, people. It's absolutely brilliant. You can find Brave New World, the 1980 version. Go and watch that one and then also watch the 1956 version, the colorized version of 1984. You'll find them. They're not hard to find on YouTube, but find those two versions and watch them. Okay, they're pixelated to death, but that doesn't matter. The theme is really, really strong in both of them. Okay, so it's reading on. It says, or what he says, our society is going to require some form of basic income in the coming years, given the tumult of climate change. So this is actually taken straight out of the other one. Tech disruption, industrial transition that lies ahead. That is why building the evidence base and public engagement now is so important. So this is exactly copy and pasted straight out of the other one into the World Economic Forum. Now, why would they do that? Well, they really, really want to push this, people. And remember, this is straight from the Klaus Schwab's mouth. It says, UBI helping vulnerable young people. Some of the most vulnerable young adults in the United Kingdom are being offered a financial helping hand as they move out of the state care system. Now, also remember, when the parents lose their jobs and they can't afford the mortgages on the houses they're paying off and they lose them to the bank, what do the kids get? Nothing. Okay. Moving on, it says a devolved government in Wales has announced a guaranteed income scheme for 18-year-olds who are leaving care homes and foster parents. The pilot program will also pay care leavers $2,046 a month. The payments will continue for 2 years and will not be withdrawn if the recipient gets a job, you see? So it's free money. Who would say no to that, people? But this is how they're doing it. They're making everyone think, I want to be that person. The trouble is, this is a short-term thing. It's not going to be like this in the long run, I can tell you right now. It says they want to collapse jobs. That's the whole point. And stop you from, doing business amongst other people. They want to crush that. Make sure that no one, you're going to need permission to do anything or they'll cut that money off. And so you won't do it because you're scared the money will get cut off. This is how they're going to control the society when it gets to that level. They're going to let you go and start a business up. That's not what's going to happen, people. They're just going to keep you on that, sort out the people they don't want, and keep the minions that they do. And that's what they're going to do. You'll have no power. You won't be allowed to form communities or anything because they'll be monitoring. The moment you step out of that line, they'll cut your only form of income because that's what it will become. They'll cut it off. Okay? It says the Welsh government says children leaving the care system face a particularly difficult transition into adulthood. Finding work, housing or continuing in further education can be challenging for those who have grown up in care. So this is where they're starting it. Care leavers have the right to be properly supported as they develop into independent young adults. Welsh Minister for Social Justice, Jane Hutt, said when announcing the pilot program, it is important to note that this policy is underpinned by the United Nations Conventions on the Rights of the Child. emphasising our commitment to strengthening the rights of children and young people in Wales. So that's the excuse they're using for starting the EBI, is to give these people a chance. That's what they're saying. It says the government says its scheme will provide a test for the stated benefits of basic income, such as addressing poverty and unemployment and improving health and financial well-being. And it's got government income schemes tried and tested. Now, here they go again. With the rising influence of AI and automation in the jobs market and a widening global wealth gap, I wonder why that's happening, guaranteed income schemes have been put forward as one part of the solution to growing inequality. The most comprehensive system is known as the universal basic income. The World Bank, defines the UBI as follows: a program to be delivered in cash, unconditionally and to everyone. Its design features all in cash, no conditions and no targeting. There won't even be cash by then, probably, people. This is all bogus. It's going to be controlled digital currency from a central bank. And you're going to have to beg for that money every week in the future. That's what's going to happen. And then they'll tell you what you can and can't buy. Okay, this is very, very dangerous, people. And this is the digital carrot they're swinging at people now when times get tough, because they'll tell you, you don't need to be having those mental breakdowns. No, you can just kick back and we'll do it all for you. It's basically ridiculous, people. It says it's going to challenge current practices to varying degrees. The World Bank says only a handful of countries have trialled UBI schemes and no country has one in place long term. And reading on, it says the Finland UBI experiment benefits mental health. Oh, of course it does. Unemployed people were given payments of about $620 a month as part, remember this is an American article, as part of a UBI trial in Finland in 2017 and 2018. There were no means testing, and the payments continued even if the recipient subsequently got a job. Said people receiving the payments worked an average of 78 days between November 2017 and October 2018, 6 days more than those on unemployment benefits. An analysis of the trial by McKinsey confirmed the increase. Not much of an increase, like another week, people, but there you go. It's important to them that they get you out of your job and put you on this, people. It says, in the Finnish experiment, people on the basic income reported large and statistically significant improvement in key drivers of well-being. Well, it's just the feed up. It's the lazy effect. What did I call it earlier? I think I called it the, I've got to remember that name again, people. I always forget it, but it will become ingrained in what they say, the definition. Oh, no, I'm not lazy. It's a value shift. There it is, people. I'm having a bit of a value shift and I'm going to put my feet up. Or I don't feel well enough to go to work today because I'm having a value shift. just another word for an excuse not to do something. So it says, and they've got a graph thing here, and I'm not going to go into it, but they're saying mental health is up 36%. Physical health, 12%. It's just, you know, these are always when they do these polls, remember any polls, about 1,000 people. It's not the whole world, but that's what they do. So just to finish that off, it says, in the Finnish experiment, people on the basic income reported large and statistically significant improvements in key drivers of well-being. I've already read that. It says the trial also found that people who received the UBI reported a significant boost to their mental health. They probably want more money. Well-being and levels of confidence when thinking about the future. It said the McKinsey report concluded that a relatively small positive intervention seems to have generated multiple mutually reinforcing positive effects. It's just then they move on to Alaska's annual payments for all. It says the U.S. state of Alaska, and we know this because it's been going for a long time, have been running a form of guaranteed income since 1982. Now, there's a reason for this, people. I'll read on, but there's definitely a reason why they could afford it. This is the key word here, people. It says every resident in the state, including children, okay? Remember the other one, the UBI is for adults. This is children, receives an annual payment from the Alaska Permanent Fund. So I've already read this before, which draws its revenue from oil and mining leases. This means the payment varies depending on oil prices, but it's normally between $1,000 and $2,000. The payment for 2021 was $1,104, but with the oil prices surging, the dividend for 2022 has gone up to around $3,284 American. This is what happens. So you got to understand that these systems have been in place, but they had a way to pay for them. In the case of that one, oil. They want oil gone now, people. They want lithium batteries, so Alaska better get on the battery bandwagon. So it says, one of the main reasons from the UBI skeptics is that providing guaranteed income will remove the incentive to work. Oh, that's baloney, people. They will just have a value shift. What are they talking about? Where did that come from, people? It says, however, in a review of the Finnish and Alaskan schemes for the Knowledge at Wharton program, it says, Iona Marinescu, a professor at the Penn School of Social Policy and Practice, says, not the Ministry of Love, says the opposite actually appears to be true. Remember, this is on the World Economic Forum site. What we found was astonishing, which is that on average, Alaskans work at the same rate as comparable states. What does that mean, people? The Alaskans work at the same rate as comparable states. So even with the EBI, it was, let's get out there and see if we can do it. But yet they're already on a type of universal basic income anyway, since 1982. So I'm sort of scratching my head and going, that's not a very good example. And reading on, it says, Marinescu also points out a positive effect on the broader economy, saying local businesses such as cafes or shops, cafes, I like that, see increased sales as a result of people sitting around doing nothing. I added that in. And then hire more employees to handle the boom. So the ones sitting there enjoying themselves then get asked to, could they serve themselves? It says the two put together end up seeing no effect on employment. Oh, dear people. This is on the World Economic Forum site, people, so still reading it. It says, better ways to use the money, big question mark. Now, this is where they step in and tell you what you can and can't buy. And they will do this, people, okay? They'll control food and water and everything else that you need, and you'll have to get permission to be able to get what you want. But they'll tell you. That's what happens when you give up all your freedoms and you hand it over to a global elite that really want to get rid of you. Okay? Keep that in mind. So it says, the basic principles of guaranteed income schemes appear to run counter to the fundamentals upon which much of the global economy is built. And that is true. Despite the positive outcomes in Alaska and Finland, critics suggest that no scheme has been demonstrated to work in a way that would help any nation's entire population over the long term. I can't believe it. There's actually truth between the lies or the lines. And it says, some say the funds could have more impact if used in other ways. Aha. The money needed to pay for an adequate UBI scheme would be better spent on reforming social protection systems and building more and better quality public services, according to a report by the British think tank, the New Economic Foundation. So there you go. That's on their site, people. They're just saying, you know, maybe there's another way. So I'm going to click on this other way and see what this think tank is putting forward. Now we might be able to get an idea of what the World Economic Forum really wants. Uh-oh, it's a PDF from 2019. So I'd say maybe prior to COVID. Did they know something? Let's see if I can get it up, see if I can find it. It's in the downloads. There it is there. And it's just a report from a think tank, not a big deal. But I want to see, because the World Economic Forum has said the other scheme might not work, but this could. So I want to see what's in this one, because they're not really promoting it. It's just a link. You have to go and read it. So here I am, and I'm just going to see how many pages before I attempt this, because sometimes some of these articles can be, yep, that's right, very long. So I'm just scrolling down it, and I was right, it is very long indeed. I'm just going to see how many pages it's got. It's doing a slow scroll to the end, and it looks like it's about 50 pages. So no, I'm not going to read that right now, but what I might do, I will put it up. I'll put the link up, but I'm going to see if there's anything in this article that's worth, you know, where it says something different from what we've already just heard. One sec. Now, I found this is on page, so it's quite far into it, page 38. It's got chapter 9 core conclusion. So really that's all. I didn't want to go through the whole this, that, and that because it's probably worth reading, but I wanted to see what this article thought of the UBI in the end. And this is the core conclusion, and it doesn't surprise me. This is why you don't want a UBI, people. It says, making cash payments to individuals to increase their purchasing power in a market economy is not a viable route to solving problems caused or exacerbated by neoliberal market economics. So if you can get your head around that one. And it says, next point, there is no evidence that any version of a UBI can be affordable, inclusive, sufficient, and sustainable at the same time. And next point, it says, there is no evidence that UBI will help to increase the bargaining power of workers and trade unions or solve problems of low pay and precarious work. So that's something to think about, because remember, they said you could still have a job and have a UBI, and then you're going to have all these complex problems like that where you're trying to get the job to actually pay the workers more and things like that, and you're going to get roadblocks because, oh, you're already getting a UBI. Why do you need more money? These are all possible problems, but the idea is they just want to get you out of your job. That's what the UBI is going to be designed to do, as a fail-safe to stop everyone from falling through the cracks and causing anarchy and, you know, fight back and joining together and pointing at the 1%. Well, this is how they're going to pacify most of the population into a lazy, value shift for the, you know, for the modern age, for the utopia you think you're getting. Moving on to the next point, it says, rapidly changing labour markets, inadequate welfare systems, poverty, inequality and powerlessness are complex problems that call for complex changes on many levels. There is no silver bullet of the kind that the UBI is often claimed to be. Next point. The campaign for UBI threatens to divert political energies as well as funds from more important causes. That is so true. Another point. It is necessary and possible to raise funds to bring greater security, opportunity and power to all people, but the money needed to pay for an adequate UBI scheme would be better spent on reforming social protection systems and building more and better quality public services. And that's really what people will want. But see, they want to create a world government with a central bank. They want you to not have a say. This is how they do it, people. When you're all blanketed under one payment system, the councils, the governments have really no say. It becomes something bigger than them, okay? More like a corporate dictator looking after all its employees are all on the same money. Very, very strange, people. But anyway, it says, next point. Many, although not all, proponents of UBI see it as a means to fix problems that unions care about. Thus, the UBI debate creates important opportunities for unions to advocate for quality public services, progressive labour and welfare reform. And the final point in their core conclusion is, however, unions should be careful when intervening in these debates that they do not unnecessarily alienate those proponents of the UBI who are potential allies. Now, the rest of it goes on. I don't know if I want to get into this because it's another 10 pages of examples of testing the UBI in practice. So they've got a section that says trial in poor countries. And we go, okay, we understand India and what's going to happen there. And then they've got Zomba in, looks like Malawi. Then you've got, and they've all got these different systems they're doing. They've got one in Kenya. But see, I don't want to get in them. I want to see what's going to, I'll see if they've got a middle income one or some. Here we go there. Trials in the middle income country. Now it's got Brazil. It says these are three schemes in Brazil that can be considered under the broader umbrella of a UBI. The first is a Bolsa Familia, which is a conditional cash transfer scheme that provides payments to poor families whose children are enrolled in school and complete their vaccinations. I can't believe I just read that. Complete their vaccinations. What did the World Health Organization write this into the World Economic Forum's one as well? But this is actually none of them. This is a completely different think tank. But anyway, reading on. So you've got to probably remember when they wrote this was probably in the time of COVID. So that's what I'm thinking. It says existing research shows that this scheme has led to a reduction in child labor. improved school enrollment, and reduced poverty. It says, in addition, families were found to spend their cash transfers predominantly on school supplies, food and clothing for their children. Now, that's interesting, because in Australia, they had the healthy welfare card that they gave to people in Sedona and South Australia. But what they didn't tell you about what they were doing with these cards that they gave people, that they weren't allowed to buy tobacco or alcohol or anything that they wanted. They had to spend money on what was allowed. This is exactly the same thing, except they're telling you here, oh, they voluntarily did it. No, no, no. In the future, they will tell you what you can and can't buy. You'll go to the supermarket, you'll get your card out, and it will say, I'm sorry, but we can't sell you that because your card won't allow it. This is a sort of way they're going to control the public through this. And this is a very, very dangerous world. You won't be allowed to grow your own food. You'll just have to eat what they tell you can have. So it says the second scheme, known as the, Recivitas, or Recivitas, I don't know Portuguese, but I'll just, R-E-C-I-V-I-T-A-S, is a UBI scheme funded through the NGO of that name. It makes regular monthly payments to all residents in the village of Quatingo Velo. It says the scheme was established in 2008. Residents of the village received 30 Brazilian reals per month. Although the scheme is currently funded by private donations to the NGO, it says the RECIVITAS aims for the scheme to become self-sustaining. It hopes to do this by encouraging recipients to invest their income in a local investment bank, which repays all the proceeds to the residents in the form of a UBI rather than to shareholders or other investors. There is little research on the outcomes of this scheme. Well, it's still going since 2008. Obviously, it didn't work. They're still waiting for people to invest in the little bank, New World Order in their own little village. It says the third scheme is currently being implemented in the city of Marica. The current mayor of Marica, Fabiana Horta, is a member of the PT, the Democratic Socialist Workers' Party. Under the city's previous mayor, also of the PT, the scheme only made payments to the city's poorest residents. In 2016, Fabiana Horta rolled it out to all residents. It consists of a monthly stipend of R$10. So I'm thinking it's saying here, because it's an English article, £2.61 for all, with poor families receiving an extra $85, it says R$85, which is £22.21 per month. It says payments are made on a cash card and the supplement existing welfare benefits. It is hoped that the cash cards will, see how it's a card, see people, it's not cash. Cash cards will improve financial inclusion. The scheme is combined with existing federally mandated welfare benefits, as well as a free local transportation service implemented by the local government. There is little evaluation data on the scheme and lack of empirical research. So it's just a utopian dream at this stage in Brazil. So it says trials in rich countries. So that's the only one they're mentioning on the middle income, which is the Brazil. Now they've gone trials in rich countries. And it says the Mincom experiment ran between 1975 and 1978. It selected a sample size of 1,300 low-income households from across the state of Manitoba, as well as a control group of low-income households who did not receive any form of payment. In one town, Dauphin, Mincom payments were extended to all qualifying low-income residents with a total of 586 families enrolled. So this is a long time ago, people. The guaranteed levels were, looks like Canadian $3,800, Canadian $4,600, and Canadian $5,400 per month for a family of two adults and two children aged younger than 15 years. It says, adjusted accordingly to family size for smaller and larger families. The income ceiling for a family of four was $13,000 Canadian dollars per month for the dispersed sample and $9,000 Canadian per month for participants in Dauphin. It says, monthly payments were made in addition to any income from work, pensions or welfare benefits. The federal Canadian government funded 75% of the schemes, that's taxpayers' money, and the province funded the remaining 25%. The scheme was ended in 1978. That's sort of funny. When the federal government decided that the overall cost of the experiment was too high. So there you go. They're using taxpayers' money to fund this UBI-type experiment, and it failed. So this is my main argument about this UBI. Where are they going to get the money? Same thing happened in COVID. Where did they get the money to pay off COVID? How is this all possible to pull fiat money, because that's what it is, out of thin air? Is that what they did? It says the income scheme used a relatively large sample size, included a randomized controlled trial, producing data that is widely held to be robust, and as a result, countries, what it says, continues, sorry, I got the typo wrong there, continues to be used in an analysis of proposed UBI schemes. So that's a really old trial, people, from way back then, and they still use that as a model. So it says analysis from the data gathered across the Mincome experiment found that labour market effort decreased by 1%. Interesting, isn't it, people? 3% for married women and 5% for unmarried women. It says, although these findings were considered statistically insignificant because of the sample size, they led to negative media reporting and reduced public support for the experiment. So there you go. This is why people went, let it go. Who cares? Now they went to New Jersey in the United States. It says, the New Jersey and the Pennsylvania income maintenance experiment was a negative income tax scheme that ran between 1968 and 1972, way back then. President Nixon supported the experiment. I'm sure he did. It included 1,357 households who were paid at rates between 50% and 125% of the poverty level and taxed at rates ranging from 30 to 70%. This graduated scheme hoped to incentivize work in rapidly deindustrializing urban areas. Remember, when this is when China and countries like that were starting to take on all the work from around the world. And this is when people started realizing, hang on, we're about to destroy our economies and our townships that live around those economies. So this is when the ball started rolling in the wrong direction way back then, people. It says payments were made per household and the sample was limited to families whose normal income did not exceed 1.5 times the poverty level and to families with one working age male who was neither a full-time student nor disabled. Families in receipt of the NIT payments became ineligible for Medicaid, Medicaid, that's right, and food stamps. It says the key finding from the experiment was that the overall people's labour market effort and participation decreased. There you go, people. It was found that the majority of those who withdrew from the labour market, as with Mincome, were either women or young people. It is suggested that the primary reasons for this were re-entering educational training or taking on caregiving roles. I think it's called value shift, people. It says before the scheme began, it was hypothesized that it would promote family stability as relationships would not be adversely affected by changes in work patterns. The evidence, however, found that those who participated in the scheme experienced higher rates of divorce. This may suggest that the scheme gave women greater financial independence. It just means the scheme didn't work, people. And this is what's going to happen when this new one comes along. They know it's going to fail, people. That's what I've been trying to say while I'm reading these articles out, so you can see that they need it to fail so they can get you into their grasp of the New World Order's claws and then squeeze. Okay. Now, there's a whole bunch of other ones they've named, like Switzerland, Scotland, United Kingdom. I didn't want to go into the whole thing, but I did think that was evidence that they know the UBI is going to fail, but they want to implement it anyway. So it's going to be forced on you in a sense, because if economies collapse and jobs go, which is starting to happen, they know, and I'll keep watching the bankruptcies with like a hawk and the gold rising, because that's going to be indicators, and the police signs in all the towns that you live in, that's another indicator you'll see. They want it to fail. They need you to join this involuntarily so that they can then implement their control mechanisms over every citizen on the planet from birth to death. Seriously, everyone has to eat, people, and they know that. Now, the next article is getting more up to date. September the 12th, 2023, it says, is the rise of AI the best argument for the universal basic income. And see, what's just happened on the news too, people, Sam Altman, he was the guy that was instrumental in getting AI on the map, has just been sacked, and he's joined Microsoft. This is a very dangerous thing, and it's really caused a massive ripple in the ChatGPT, the whole AI world. It's a really big story at the moment. And it just shows you how much tug of war is going in between all these people, these entrepreneurs and people that want to support the AI, because they know this is the thing that's going to force the UBI onto people, because as soon as this comes in and starts taking jobs, it's going to cause this angst where people go, well, there's not going to be enough for the unemployment benefits to go around because there's not enough people working. That's why they want to do this, people, because you don't have to have a working you don't have to have a workforce to create this. That's what they're telling you. And you're thinking, where are they going to get the money from? Well, it'll become a global pool in the end, you see. It won't be just country by country. It'll be a global UBI. That's why it's called, funny enough, universal basic income. The moment they keep calling it basic income sometimes, but it's a universal basic income. So this story came out on WBUR.org. On the September the 12th, 2023, and it's called Is the Rise of AI the Best Argument for Universal Basic Income? And it's got, could artificial intelligence replace hundreds of millions of jobs in the near future? Now, that's not quite true. I don't think that'll happen, but this was going to be one of the main reasons that they want to get the EVI happening, which is a control mechanism, just like QR coding and all that. You've got to get permissions. And they can get their digital ID in, because that's what they want. They want to be able to map everyone on the planet from birth to death. They have more power that way. And it says, most CEOs and managers aren't preparing enough for that transition, says Eric. Wow, that's a big name. It looks like Brynjolfsson. The next coming decade could be the best decade that we've seen on Earth, or it could be one of the worst. If that happens, how will people make ends meet? It says, we're all the ones who trained AI. We all made it possible. We should receive our cut of all this productivity growth, says Scott Sattins. And it says, could the rise of AI be the best argument for yet for the universal basic income? So what this is, it's a transcript of three people talking and then another fourth person. So that's what it is. So what I'll do is I'll probably just read through it, because it's actually quite a long transcript, but I'm just going to see if there's a conclusion at the end, because it is a full-on conversation. It's probably something worth listening to rather than me doing an audio book version of it. It's probably worth listening to the debate between the three or four of them, and I'm just going to see if I can find some sort of conclusion. It's actually a really long talk, so they've even put a part three in there, so maybe it's not going to be the one. It just says, it just goes on. I may have a listen to it myself and see if there's anything to pull out of it. But at the moment, it's probably just left best as it is. But it brings up a very good point, which is what it was saying about jobs and AI. The most up-to-date article I've got at the moment is October the 29th, 2023. And it's thebusinessinsider.com. And it's called Universal Basic Income is Working Even in Red States. We're talking about a US article, and it says in the spring of 2022, it says, Tadrinka Lewis finally bought a car that started every time she asked it to and no longer left her stranded. Her 2020 Nissan Rogue was essential to her new job as peer support specialist. It says, helping people in mental health crisis required her to be able to get to places reliably and fast, and it was essential to her new life outside prison, where she'd spent 6 years and 4 months for chasing fraudulent checks. It was a car that Lewis, a 32-year-old single mother of three, would not otherwise have been able to afford. But when she was selected for Durham, this is North Carolina's Guaranteed Income Pilot Program, she knew exactly where her $600 monthly stipend would be spent. It says in late 2020, the then Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey pledged $15 million to the national advocacy group Mayors for Guaranteed Income to help select cities and towns across America kickstart basic income programs. It says Dernham was one of 25 recipients and received $500,000 from Dorsey and another $500,000 from local philanthropy and the city's coffers. Makes you wonder why the Twitter boss is handing out $500,000 to see if a program that's in line with the universal basic income was going to do. It makes you, what's his motivation? What does he get out of it? Well, he's no longer with Twitter, but still, these are the people in power that are now running our lives, in a sense. You've got Elon Musk with X, which is used to be Twitter. This is information. This is where the new economy lies, is in the information of what is, yeah, used to be insider trading and stuff, but now everyone just gives everything out. They actually said once that the FBI doesn't need to plant microphones anymore. I think it might have been the CIA, because you tell them all about what you're doing in real life in Facebook. It's actually true, people. It's actually true. So it says Dernham's mayor pro tempore Mark Anthony Middleton, who helped oversee the program, had been advocating for his city to introduce a basic income for years. He says, we wanted to see what a stream of income without any determination of virtue or vice attached to it would do, he said. As Dernham's population has ballooned, many of its lower income and black residents have been pushed to the fringes. Once one of the South centres of black commerce with its own Black Wall Street, the vibrant Haiti community home to the renowned historical Black North Carolina Central University, Dernham has come much whiter by 51% over the past 20 years, according to a US census data. And as wealthier residents moved in, Dernham's median home price rose by more than 50% between 2010 and 2019. It's another way to price people out too, Phil. So the city decided that all of the $1 million in basic income funds would go to a single vulnerable group, formerly incarcerated residents. So it says many taxpayers were not happy about this. As the program neared its launch in March 2022, Middleton's inbox and mailbox were flooded with messages filled with epithets. They came from white residents in the more conservative counties near Dernham to recent transplants from liberal strongholds like New York City and the Bay Area. They demanded to know why the city was underwriting criminals, de-incentivizing work with free handouts, and spending public dollars to help people who, in some opinions, might not deserve help. Middleton's answer to all criticism was steadfast, simple, and by his own admission, very selfish. We're going to have to pay for these people one way or another, either in incarceration, benefits, homeless shelters, whatever it is, he told me. It seems to me that spending more money up front makes more sense than housing folks, monitoring and feeding them, and taking care of their health care in prison. He encourages, well, that's why they went to prison. That sort of defeats the purpose of why you do something bad, get caught and sent to prison. If you don't go to prison, does that incentivize criminals? I mean, this is just, but this is what they want, people. This is exactly the breakdown in society that they're looking for. It says he encourages skeptical taxpayers to look at universal basic income from the same selfish point of view. By virtue of your humanity, your citizenship, and your residency, he said, there's a certain line we will not allow you to fall under because it's good policy for us. It says, though the data is still nascent, basic income has proven to be a good policy everywhere it's been tested in America. The Dernham program would be one of its greatest tests yet. And it's got the idea that the government should guarantee all citizens a set amount of money has been discussed at the margins of American policy throughout the nation's history. In 1797 pamphlet, Agrarian Justice, it says Thomas Paine argued that all citizens had the right to a guaranteed lump sum when they became adults. So during the Great Depression, Louisiana's Governor Huey Long proposed a guaranteed annual household income of $2,000 to $3,000, some $40,000 to $60,000 in 2023. In 1972, when Senator George McGovern was running for president, he proposed writing a $1,000 check annually to every American. Though the concept faltered in the Reaganomics era of the 1980s and the Clintonomics of the 1990s. Talk of a universal basic income reemerged during the 2020 presidential election campaign when it became a major platform point of the candidate Andrew Yang. That's what I mentioned earlier in the podcast. It says, what's helpful about cash is it cash that it's cash and you can use it whenever you need. That's just actually so true. A large part of the renewed interest is that we have a higher degree of inequality now than we did before the Great Depression, said Anna Jefferson, a principal investigator at the ABT Associates who studies data from basic income programs across the country. It says in the past few years, aided no doubt by the economic consequences wrought by the pandemic, centuries of theory have at last been put to the test. A few dozen cities across the country have begun basic income programs, and the early results have been overwhelmingly positive. In Denver, more than 800 of the city's most vulnerable residents received monthly stipends of up to $1,000. So just so you know what a stipend is, because I was actually looking at that, it could be a stipend. I think that might be how you properly pronounce it. But I'll just tell you what it means, because it has popped up a couple of times in the podcast. A stipend or stipend or however you want to pronounce it is a regular fixed sum of money paid for services or to defray expenses. So that's what a stipend is. So it might pop up again, but just so you know. And it says, so the residents receive monthly stipends of up to $1,000. So it says, so far the program has reduced homelessness, increased employment, and bolstered the mental health outcome of participants. A similar program in Stockton, California, had similar effects. The unemployment rate among the 125 participants was nearly halved. Researchers at the University of Pennsylvania studying the program concluded it could have profound positive impacts on local public health. Now, remember, these people in the study, they know they're in the study. They know they're being scrutinized and watched. You know what I mean? It's not like no one's watching them. It's not really a full indication of whether people would go full. What was that word again? I've got to remember. I've already forgotten what it was. Full value shift. There it is. Or not. So these are things they don't know. They're just sort of looking at their surveys and thinking that will apply to the whole population, which I doubt it would. So it says, reading on, it says, the unemployment rate of the 125 participants has nearly halved. Researchers at the University of Pennsylvania studying the program concluded it could have profound positive impacts on local public health. See, this is a big thing they're pushing, is the health thing since the pandemic too. It's got pilot programs that sprung up across the country from liberal strongholds such as Los Angeles and Baltimore to more centrist and conservative cities like Columbia, South Carolina, Birmingham, Alabama, and Gainesville, Florida. It says Just Income, the Florida program, also focused on stipends on formerly incarcerated individuals with a rationale similar to Middleton's. It costs Floridians, I think that's how you say, Floridians, looks right, about $28,000 a year to hold someone in prison. Can you imagine that, people? People aren't even earning that, and they're holding, anyway. It says the director of the Gainesville program said in a press release earlier this year, alternatively, we're investing just $7,600 directly to one of our valued neighbors, giving them a vital income floor. In city after city and cohort after cohort, old, young, single parents, ex-convicts, universal basic income has improved health outcomes, raised employment and bolstered childcare opportunities, and recipients have had consistently better outcomes than the control groups. So it says, according to Jefferson, guaranteed income, which she calls unrestricted cash transfers, that's UCT, impacts recipients' lives almost immediately. Every result of her firm's analysis said, really show that cash can improve people's financial stress and mental health remarkably and quickly. And it says, with more data at hand than a theoretical projection, the evidence is overwhelming. universal basic income is working nearly universally. Even though we can see that it's not going to work, they just tell you in these articles and you just think, well, that's a good thing. So it says, to qualify for Durham's guaranteed income program, which the city called Excel, applicants had to be Durham residents 18 years or older, incarcerated no later than 2016, and fall below the 60% of the city's annual medium income. It says, from a pool of 247 eligible applicants, 109 were randomly selected to be recipients, and the rest were part of the control group. It says, one element that was essential to Middleton was that the money Excel handed out come with no strings attached. He wanted to see how the beneficiaries chose to use their money. None were required to check it with Step Up, the Durham-based nonprofit that administered the program, or the city to explain how and where they were using their income. There was no work requirement and no surveys to fill out. Recipients all received a debit card, there you go, preloaded with $600 a month for a year, $7,200 to spend as they please. Just watch what they spend it on. That's what they're really looking at. They want to see if they're going to have the right model to be able to accept this cash monthly and use it in a proper fashion. So it says, folks paid their rent. They bought clothes for their children. They bought medicine. Some people took a weekend trip, Middleton said. Mostly people did normal stuff. They paid bills and bought food. Surprise, surprise. Others paid off long-standing student loans. It says, Jefferson has found this is typical of how basic income recipients across the country spend their stipends. While it's difficult to pinpoint exactly where each dollar goes, the vast majority of the recipients spend them on the basics. Well, that's because they haven't got any money, people. Healthier food, school supplies, and developmental support for their children. What's helpful about cash is that it's cash, and you can use it for whenever you need, Jefferson said, but it's not really cash, people. It's a card. It's linked to an app or a bank, and they can monitor it in real time. So it's not like cash where you can go and buy something and no one knows what you bought, you see, because they don't know who you are. Because you can stay anonymous. It says, after she was released from prison in 2019, it says, Tredrinka Lewis cobbled together a living by holding two, sometimes three jobs at once, including at a KSC and a Habitat for Humanity Resource Centre. A few months after her release, she was certified as a peer support specialist and began working with a non-profit that provides community mental health and substance abuse treatment. She could have used her Excel money to buy food or clothes for her three children, who were 18, 11, and 3. But she saw a car as the linchpin through which she could provide her family, a foundation to hopefully pull them out of the poverty that she had been mired in for so much of her life. That sounds more like she was just looking for something for herself, people. It says, the rogue also offered Lewis peace of mind, knowing that she and her kids would no longer have to worry about the car's heater fritzing out in the middle of Durham's icy winters. It still sounds like it's something for her, people. By all early accounts, Excel had been a resounding success. The employment rates and housing rates among the recipients have steadily climbed. And during the program's year-long run, there was 0% rate of reoffending as ex-criminals. And there it was. So, I mean, this is, they're using ex-cons to do a experiment. Now, these, what they know, they're being watched. So the whole idea is for them to sail through this and then whatever they want, if they want to refund later, they can. They're never going to come back and look at these people. This is a one-off survey, people. So you just got to take it as it is. So the next part, just to finish up, because I'm way over the podcast, economically stable people make better neighbours. When they aren't worried about how they're going to pay their bills, they tend not to come through your window at night. That's actually quite true. It says researchers at the University of Pennsylvania studying the program plan to have data comparing recipients' outcomes to the control group's outcomes in 2024. So we've got to wait for that one, people. But based on early results, Durham County is now set to roll out a $750 a month guaranteed income pilot to 125 local families who have children at home and fall beneath the 30% of the country's annual medium income. It says, meanwhile, Middleton has secured another $1 million in the city's budget to continue the initiative with public dollars. which he hopes will kick off in mid-2024. So there you go. This is serious stuff. And as I said, it's I worry all the time. We got cameras now and all that, but I worry that the crazies are coming, people, and they don't mean to be crazies. These aren't criminals. These are people that have never committed the crime going to rob you because they're hungry, because they can't pay their bills, because they're about to be turfed out of their home and become homeless. It pushes people to the edge, people. They do things they never thought they were capable of doing. Now, just to finish up the article, it says, promising as these pilot programs are, the chances of a truly universal basic income in America remain remote. For one, empirical evidence does not equal political will. It says UBI researchers often point to the Congress's decision not to renew the COVID-era child tax credit, even though it slashed America's monthly child poverty rate by 30%. There you go, people, they really care. As a measure of how difficult passing a nationwide UBI would be, the main political roadblock is its cost. A 2022 Washington Post story about UBI noted that providing $1,000 a month to every American, regardless of income, would cost more than $3 trillion a year, nearly half the federal government's entire budget. It's not meant to work, people. So I'm trying to tell you, they want this to be introduced, then fail. It says, but at the same, as the same article noted, a mass of evidence suggests that pulling people out of poverty generates a huge increase in tax revenue, as well as savings on public assistance programs. And it says, and as Jefferson noted, if new pilot programs produce the same results as what's been tested, they may help sway the court of public opinion yet. If still more data shows, he said, it shows that guaranteed income is reducing the need for food assistance or housing subsidies or criminal justice systems or even burdens on healthcare systems, it may be something that pays for itself. They're going to dangle every digital carrot idea they can to make people do this. But you know what's going to really make it work? When it gets to the point where you have no choice but to take it. And that's when they collapse the entire... that's when they bring in the recession that we had to have. They're going to collapse all jobs across the Western world and drag all the middle class down to a lower level. And then people will scream for the UBI. And they won't care how it's funded. They'll just want it in place so they can survive. That's what's going to happen. It says, as for Trudinka Lewis, basic income afforded her the latitude to start her own non-profit. The New Generation Movement offers peer support to the kinds of young girls she once was. Raised in poverty, often from single-parent homes, and in some cases acquainted with the looks like the carceral system, which is obviously the prison system. Lewis has taken them to the Durnham Bulls baseball game, hosted cookouts and dance parties, and helped them create vision boards imagining their own futures. Though she's making more money than she has ever in her life, Lewis still struggles to make ends meet. Staying above Durnham's rising tide has proven difficult. This September, her rent on her two-bedroom, two-bathroom apartment in Durnham rose from $1,486 to $1,680 a month, forcing Lewis, along with two of her children and a niece, to move in with her mother. So there you go. This is what they do, people. As the cost of living rises, they make sure that you can't keep up. And these things start to happen. In her case, it was a rental. But if she owned it, she would be thinking of selling it just to get by. That's what's going to happen to the rest of society that actually already owns their own property. The rest of them will just be repossessed and sold off to as rental properties, just like that one. And just to finish up, and this is the end result of even though the UBI helped, or this particular type of trial, she says in the end, we are literally being thrown out of our town, of the community where we've been in our whole life, Lewis said. So the end result of that story was not a happy ending, people, as you might have thought it might have been. No, it's actually gone the other way, because really, that's an example of what I'm talking about. It's not meant to work, okay? It's meant to fail. That's the point of it. Anyway, people, looks like I'm at the end of the podcast. I will do one day a big in-depth thing on 1984 and Brave New World, but it'll probably be when it's actually fully implemented. No, I'm only kidding. I'm just saying it is definitely worth looking at those two blueprints of the future and then seeing how, you know, these powers that be, these elites, these whatever, these globalists, have actually seen those books and thought, this is a great idea. Because you never see it pushed that much. And anyway, but I will check out the Brave New World, the new one that's just come out a few years back, and I'll just see how that's going. Because, you know, they twist the book, they leave things out, they do that, but still, it's the crux of the whole idea of it is there. Totalitarian regimes with people that know better than you, because you will own nothing, apparently, and apparently, you will be very happy. Anyway, people, it's the Conspiracy Oz podcast for Tuesday, the 21st of November, 2023. Thanks for listening. Over and out.